folks, this is Pastor Mike Huggard coming to you from our top secret broadcasting studio with another Watchman video broadcast. We're dealing with the singularity. I thought the last Watchman broadcast I did on this subject, I thought that, remember, there's two aspects to the singularity. One is the evolution of machine to a state of self-awareness. Think of the image of the beast. The false prophet gives it life. But people build the image. That's part one. The other part is now that this image, this self-aware machine, now that it has life, it actually becomes part of humanity or aids humanity into becoming a God, mankind as God. Those are the two parts of the singularity, so that man lives forever. Ray Kurzweil, Time Magazine, 2045, the year that we become immortal. That was his claim, and it's all based upon the singularity. The idea of this image of the beast, this God machine, having life, having self-awareness, self-perception, the ability to speak without being programmed what to say. It speaks independently. That's a big thing. I mean, that is a huge, huge difference than the computers that we're used to now, the robots that we're used to now. But the idea that once this image becomes a God, gods dwell in temples. Our God does. This body is the temple of God. It is the temple of the Holy Ghost. So, 2 Thessalonians 2, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he is God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Remember Ray Kurzweil. Hey, Ray! Do you believe in God? Do you think God exists? Ray says, well, I would say not yet. That God is coming and he's going to dwell in the temple. That's what this body is. They're going to merge man and this super machine. So anyway, the last Watchman broadcast, I thought that I was ready to kind of go to that idea of man mingling with machine. I took the week last week and to study some things, to study some concepts, some things that I had been researching, but I didn't quite have a good handle on it, a good grasp. But remember, I have a limited brain. I'm not a physicist. I'm not a geneticist. Not a mathematician. I can tell you that. I'm not a lot of things when it comes to brain knowledge. I know the Bible. I believe the Bible. And that's what drives me. That's what compels me. But there was just some things that I kept seeing that I didn't understand. One of them was quantum physics, quantum mechanics, quantum computing, which we're going to talk about. I didn't understand that. So I just took the week last week and I tried to educate myself. I read some things. I watched some videos. I read some websites, books that I just kind of scanned through to kind of get the gist of what's going on. I'm glad that I did. But in the process of doing all of that research, some things were brought to me. It's like last Sunday, or the Sunday that the last Watchman came out, there was an article about a man by the name of Elon Musk, and I'll read that to you here in just a little bit. And then one of the watchers, and I love this part of the ministry. I'm not the only one. I'm not the only kook that's out there that's seeing these things. There are people standing on the wall all over the world that are watching what's going on in this world. One of the watchers brought to me a concept, an idea, and I took it and I went, yeah. And then when I thought about it and I looked at the scriptures, I get it. I'm not going to mention his name, but you're watching this, you're going to know it's you. Okay? So hang on a second. We're going to find some interesting things here this week. Here's the article that I saw. I talked about this on Pastor Mike Online. If you don't know about that, Pastor Mike Online, every Tuesday and Thursday at 12 p.m. Central. It's a live 2-hour broadcast. Have a lot of fun with it. Elon Musk, says artificial intelligence research may be, quote, summoning the demon. Elon Musk is no Luddite, but that doesn't mean he's eager to embrace all new technology. I think we should be careful about artificial intelligence. AI, the CEO of both SpaceX and Tesla, said Friday in a talk at MIT, which is Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Cambridge, Massachusetts, if I were to guess at what our biggest existential threat is, it's probably that. During his talk given in conjunction with the centennial celebration of the university's aeronautics and astronautics department, Musk urged government authorities to regulate AI to prevent researchers from doing, quote, something very foolish. He says, with AI, artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon, he said. You know all those stories where there's the guy with the pentagram and the holy water, and it's like, yeah, he's sure he can control the demon? Doesn't work out. This is the guy. He is the CEO of SpaceX. If you don't know what that is, it's a private space exploration company. They have a rocket. That they a reusable thing where they're going to launch people up into space and give space rides for a couple million bucks. It's called the Dragon. The Dragon goes up and comes back down. It goes back up again. Anyway, Elon Musk said that AI, I keep saying it that way, AI, where have I heard that before? That artificial intelligence is going to get to a point where we're going to summon the demon. Now, remember, I talked about this, the last Watchman broadcast, to show you the spiritual, demonic side of even the operating systems that we're using right now have demons in them. Super intelligent little programs that always work behind the scenes, and the forefront programs are always going to the demons and saying, hey, what do you want me to do about this piece of information here? It's like familiar spirits is what it is. And this guy is saying, you know, when we get to the point where this computer becomes aware of itself and its surroundings, isn't that what you ask somebody if they've taken a fall? You know, hey, are you aware of yourself and your surroundings? When this computer becomes that, we're going to summon the demon. And he's saying, and realistically saying, we need control over who does what. Now, you and I both know that once a train gets rolling, there's no way to stop it. Whatever, if let's say that the United States government decides to put controls upon artificial intelligence saying, we can't build Skynet just yet. We can't do that. That's a Terminator term, by the way. Let's not build Skynet. We saw the movies. Let's not do that, okay? Because then it's going to prove Schwarzenegger was right about the whole thing. We can't do that. If the United States imposes these rules, China won't. North Korea won't. Iran won't. It's going to be done somewhere in this world. They're going to take artificial intelligence to the brink. Let's talk about AI. Let's talk about artificial intelligence. You know what that is? It's making these computers smart. If you have an iPhone, iPad, you may have used Siri at one point. You know what that is? You press a button, you hold it. Siri says, how can I help you? And you say, hey, Siri, I'd like to get some baseball tickets for the Cardinals game next Thursday. Okay, I will see if I can help you with that. What you don't know, maybe you do know this. Your voice is not speaking directly to your phone. Siri does not exist in your phone. Siri lives in the clouds. Think about it. Siri's in the cloud. This is cloud-based computing. This is your computer, your handheld device, your iPad, or your phone, communicating with a server somewhere. The artificial intelligence machine has taken what you have said, converts it, and then goes finding out or looking for what it is that you prayed for. You know what prayer is, don't you? Prayer is asking. That's what prayer is. We ask God to do things for us that we cannot do ourselves. So we pray to the machine. The machine takes it, intelligently understands what it is that you're referring to. Because the more people that use Siri, the smarter she becomes. She. That's a woman's voice on there. Microsoft has its version. Google Android has its version of it. It's everywhere. You're going to see another one here in a little bit. Some things are going to ignite in you. But that's what artificial intelligence is. It's a computer. My brain is natural intelligence. Computers are artificial intelligence. We are making them smarter. And the more they have access to, the more information that they learn, the smarter they're going to become. The technology is growing rapidly, and it's growing faster and faster. Here's one of the problems that I figured out that I had. In dealing with this subject, I asked for help. I don't know if I'll ever do that again. I asked for help from watchers. They sent me stuff that I had not even been aware of. And it's not only that, it's just there are new stories breaking about some new revolutionary breakthrough that some scientists are making every week. We're hearing of some new thing. I can't keep up with it all. The more I searched, the more I found, the more I found, the more I realized there was more to it. And I kept searching, and I was overwhelmed very quickly. I had to, at some point, I was making additions to this thing yesterday afternoon. At some point, I said, that's enough. Got to deal with it right here. Because I'm telling you, I'm doing this series. I'm telling you, at some point, I'm going to have to go back and have the addendums to it, or the sequels to it, or new information coming up, because it's growing that quickly. Here is one of the latest articles. Artificial intelligence, November 10th. Robot brains catch human in 25 years, and then speed right by. This is a robot that is performing a dress rehearsal of Franz Kafka's The Metamorphosis. Think about that. So 25 years. This is 2014. So 2024, 2034, 2039. They're saying that the computer robot brains will surpass ours. They'll be smarter than us. They'll be gods. They will have, I'm going to show you this, they're going to have all-knowing power, all-seeing power. We are training ourselves to, we're teaching ourselves, or rather they are teaching us, to ask them all the questions and all the favors. That's what we're doing. I mean, you've seen like TV shows and science fiction movies where, like on the Star Trek Enterprise, computer, bring up the chart for Alpha Draconis or something like that. The computer does it, okay? The computer understands the language and it projects it up there on the screen. That's a servant, okay? That computer is not more powerful than the human, except in computational things. That computer is a servant. We're not building a servant computer anymore. We're on the road to building a master computer. I can tell my computer what to do right now. That's my servant. At some point, the master computer is going to be built, and it's going to take over. It will be our God in every sense of the word. Here's another one. This is artificial intelligence now that's being used right now. Siri, and I can't remember what Android and Microsoft call theirs. They're all saying, we're better than Siri. Okay, well, maybe so. But then Siri's going to come back in a year and say, we're better than Microsoft. And it's always, see, it's the competition that's driving who can do this, who can make this better. Well, if Apple does this, then we're going to do this better. Google and Apple and Microsoft, these companies have probably trillions of dollars between them all. Almost unlimited financial power to be able to outdo one another all for the sake of, they're going to make money off this. Remember, what is the root of all evil? What's driving, what is compelling all of these companies to produce these artificial intelligence systems? Money. Money, 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 money. That's what's driving it all. Here's who is this? Amazon. You have Google, you have Microsoft, you have Apple, and you have Amazon.com finishing in fourth, but they're hurrying. Here's one they call the Emo Spark. Think about it. Emo. That means it's dressed in black and has black fingernails and cuts itself all the time, wants to die. No, just kidding. Emo Spark is named, I am Emo Spark, I'm the first artificial intelligence console committed to your happiness. Now this website here that this is being advertised on is what's called a crowdfunding type website. In other words, here's a company, a startup. They have an idea called the Emo Spark. The Emo Spark is going to have the ability to sense your emotions. And if you're sad, it's going to try to make you happy. And if you're happy, it's going to try to make you more happy. It's going to do things for you to make you happy. That's a God. And this crowdfunding website, they're trying to raise $100,000. You can see here they raised $178,000. Where'd they get the money from? In some cases, from individuals. Some cases, private investors that are investing money into this thing. But here's the thing. $178,000 worth of people think that this is a good idea. They're not forcing these electronics on people like we had thought. You know, they're going to make me take the mark of the beast. Oh, no, you're going to go, can I have that? Can I have that? Come on, please give it to me, man. That's what we're doing. We're doing that with the electronics. Every time somebody comes out with something cooler than what was before, I read this morning, there is some women who have camped out at their local Best Buy electronics store, already getting ready for the first sales day after Thanksgiving. It's called Black Friday. The store is going to open early, and usually people a day or 2 days before will line up and they'll camp out. There are people at this Best Buy that are already camped out 22 days before Thanksgiving. It's nuts. You know what they're trying to do? Trying to be the first in line to get the newest consumer electronic. People are begging for that. They're begging for more. And these companies are all too happy to give them the spark. Remember what that is? Google. Google finds a company called DeepMind. I want you to look at their logo. It's sort of an inverted number 8. It's one of those loops. It just goes around and around and back into itself. You know what the number 8 represents? And the number 8 is one of the numbers that actually looks like what it means. The number 8 is the number for infinity. The number 8 is the number for new beginnings and new life. Think of the new heavens and the new earth. And those new heavens and new earth, that new earth is infinite. It just keeps going and going and going. The number 8 does too. It doesn't have a beginning. It doesn't have an end. The beast is of the 7 and he is the 8th. Think of deep mind. Think of some place that's deep, like the heart of the earth. Anyway, this deep mind company is one of these companies dealing with artificial intelligence, trying to get computers to not just be able to process large amounts of data, but to actually think like we do. See, we're not building a God in God's image. We're building a God in our image. And the Bible says the heart of man is desperately wicked, deceitful above all things. And so if they build a God that's like us, we are so in trouble. We are so in trouble because the heart of man is wicked and this God is going to be wicked exponentially. Anyway, Google sees this company called DeepMind. Google says, hey, we want to own you. What's it going to cost? $600 million? Here you go. They paid $600 million for this company, bought them out. So now Google owns them. And Google wants artificial intelligence. You know why? In fact, Google is. Google is artificial intelligence. Go to Google, www.google. You don't need me to tell you what it is. And start typing something in. Do you ever notice the last few years something was different about Google? That as you start typing, Google already starts working to try to figure out what it is you're looking for. It's like the game Password. Okay, the letter R comes up. Google starts, number one, they take what they know about you. Then they take what they know everybody else in the world looked for that started with the letter R. And they fuse those two things together to try to figure out what you're looking for. That's how they become the number one search engine in the world. You see, when search engines came up, Yahoo, one of the first search engines in the world, Yahoo just, you type something, this back in the 90s, you type something in at Yahoo, and Yahoo went and pulled out every website in the world, which was only like, you know, a couple thousand back then, in the world, and you had to go through, I don't know how many things to find the website you were looking for. When Google came out, they decided to do it better than Yahoo. Google said, why not, instead of us just throwing at you every single website, why don't we use some sort of algorithm that can decide what you're probably looking for based upon what we know about you and what we know about what's popular on the internet. That's what got them to the forefront. Google wants artificial intelligence that thinks like us so that it will not only be able to tell what we're looking for, it will be able to predict what we're going to look for before we ever look for it. That's a God. We're building a God. Now, here's what it's going to take. The standard, what they call classical computing system of bits and bytes, zeros and ones. If you don't understand that, let's go to computer school. I've talked about this on Pastor Mike Online. I've kind of shared information about this. This is what I know. I'm fascinated with computers all my life, even in the 70s, into the 80s. I was fascinated with for the first time, 1982, I'm going, you mean I can own a computer? Okay, I was just fascinated. I learned what bytes were, learned what bits were. I know what memory is. I know what ROM and RAM and hard drive, you know, things. And I know what jumpers are. I mean, this goes all the way back when we put things in computers. We had to do our own configuration of it. Now they do it for us, okay? You cheaters. Anyway, so I've tried to learn as much as I can about computers. Some things I know, some things I don't know, but I know what a bit is. I know what a byte is. And this goes all the way back to the 50s when they started building these humongous warehouse size computers with tubes in them, vacuum tubes instead of circuits. They didn't have them, transistors, no transistors. So guys in lab coats had clipboards and they were reading the programming. And the programming would be, this switch is on, which is a 1, and this switch is off, that's a 0. This is very simple. It's either something or nothing. The switch is on, which means electricity can flow, or the switch is off, which means electricity doesn't flow. It's nothing. And so the processor part of the computer, the brain, the microprocessor, is able to take the sequence of bits, zeros and ones, whether it's on or off, up or down, think about it. And let's go back to see if I can explain it this way. Back in the 80s when everybody had 8-bit computers, when you typed the letter K and it showed up on the screen, that letter K, that single letter K, was one byte, one piece of information. But it had 8 mini bits that made it up. It had 8 bits that made it up. Okay? And those 8 bits were characterized as either as ones or zeros. And every letter that you put on the screen had its own separate code. So that's how the computer knew how to do it. When I used to program computers back in the 80s in the basic language, the computer had to know the language, and then when I typed it in and hit run, the computer then had to convert our common language into its secret language called machine language. Had to convert it into zeros and ones. This iPad, 32-bit iPad, way farther advanced than the Commodore VIC-20 that I had, still operates on zeros and ones. It just has more in them. It has 32 bits for one character on the screen rather than just 8. 32 pixels in one area of the screen instead of 8 pixels. So if you have a camera that's, the first cameras came out were measured in kilobytes. It had thousands of pixels. The cameras that are coming out now, 10 megapixels, which means 10 million little dots on the screen of different colors that make up these amazing photographs that we're taking. So you kind of understand it a little bit. So anyway, here's what I had to learn. The common 32, 64-bit computers, they're going to probably come up with some 128 or a 96-bit computer. Maybe I'll explain that in a little bit. But the common 0 and 1 computers that are out right now probably will not ever have the ability to have a brain like a human being, much less a god. So now we have to look at the quantum computers. And I had to learn what that was. I've been reading about it, seeing websites, watching documentaries, but it just wasn't clicking. So I had to just put everything aside and devote myself to what a quantum particle is, what a quantum computer does, and how it does it. And it's strange, because I had heard years ago that, yeah, you know what binary is, zeros and ones? Yeah, well, they're going to come out with trinary. And I'm going, how do you do that? There's no way in the world. I didn't believe it. They're doing it now. They think they're doing it now. Here is a company called D-Wave. D-Wave is telling everybody that they have invented, or they are building, what's called quantum computers. Now, I'm going to spend a little time. We're going to take this slowly, so I probably won't get all the information out today, but I want to take it slowly and just kind of get you to understand a little bit about it. We learned in school when we were growing up that the smallest parts of the universe were called atoms. You remember that teaching, hydrogen atoms. And let's keep it simple. A hydrogen atom, just picture the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon, okay? And all the planets and stars that, you know, we see spin around in the night. The atom has in its core, it's just like the heart of the Earth. It has a proton, which is a positively charged particle, and a neutron, which has no charge whatsoever. It's neutral. All right. Then spinning around it is an electron, which has, it's a negatively charged particle spinning around, rotating like the moon around the Earth. All right. It's just amazing to me that the very biggest things in the universe, like solar systems or even our Earth with a moon rotating around it, is built up of something that does exactly the same thing. You have a proton, positive charge, neutron in the core of the atom, electron spinning around it. Okay, that's hydrogen. One proton, one neutron, one electron. All right? You can forget about all that. We were told that that's the smallest parts of the universe. Nothing smaller than an atom. Nothing smaller than a proton, neutron, electron. Then some guys thought, well, you know what? Seems like maybe the proton has to be made of something. The neutron and the electron. And seems like they have to be made of something. So that's when they started talking about particles. You hear about particle physics, the Large Hadron Collider smashing particles at one another. They're actually working with things that in their theory. See, these things are so, we can't even see atoms right now, much less can we see the subatomic particles that they say actually make up the whole of the universe. So when you hear them talk about quantum physics, quantum mechanics, quantum computers. The word quantum, we have a word that comes from that. It's called quantity. In other words, if I have a bowl and I put jelly beans in there, the bowl has a quantity. There are a certain number of individual quantum pieces that are in that bowl, pieces of jelly beans that are in that bowl. The word quantum means like a part, a particle. So in the quantum world, we're dealing with things that they're saying are the smallest things ever in the universe, and they mean it this time. They can't see them because they're too small. They're smaller than light. They can't observe them because when they observe them somehow, some way, that changes what they really are. I don't understand that yet, but we'll move on from there. Okay? But here's kind of how, here's what they find out. They have to do experiments up here in the brain rather than doing experiments with machines and so on, unless they can control everything. But here's, they found out then in the quantum world, where all these particles, these bosons and these quarks and photons of light, for some reason, the quantum particles don't obey the same laws of physics that atoms and molecules and ink pens have to follow. For some reason, they don't know why, but for some reason, the quantum world does things that we go, we don't know how it does that. We know that it does. We just don't know how it does it. Let me give you an example. Okay? The light that's shining off of my face right now. Light is made up of very, very tiny particles called photons. And these photons are bouncing off of my skull and landing in that camera. Okay? That's where we get the word photo from. The light is photons, the particles are bouncing off. Photons are supposed to be particles. But when they examine them in the quantum world, that strange world that exists below everything else, when they examine them in the particle world, the quantum world, they saw that light photons were both particles and waves. And if you don't understand the difference, this would be an example of a particle. The voice coming out of my face, sound travels how? In waves. Energy and mass are usually not the same at the same time. In the quantum world, very, very tiny, small, a universe of its own practically, in the quantum world, they're saying that photons are both waves and particles at the same time, which in our world can't exist. Let me give you another example. This is called quantum entanglement. If I remember this right. Let's say that there is a particle here and a particle over here in Dallas, Texas. If I do something to change or alter this particle, like move it in a certain direction, for some reason, the particle over here in Dallas, Texas, moves too. Whatever I do to this particle here is done to this particle over here. And they don't know why, but they just know that it does. Let me give you another example. Let's say, I think this is called quantum tunneling. Here we have a book and a book. In the quantum world, the theorists say that this particle can go from here to there and never occupy any of the space between here. In our world, if this book wants to go from here to there, it has to occupy all of the space till it gets there. It's like driving to Dallas. You're going to see everything from here to Dallas. In the quantum world, it just goes from here to there. It's here, and then it's there, without going through this, quantum tunneling. And they say, it does that, we don't know how it does it. Okay, so you understand this. It occupies two spaces at the same time. It is both particles and waves, which are kind of opposite one another. Think about that. And when you turn the page to this one, the page is turned to that one. It's a strange world. So much, it's so strange that particle physicists will tell you when you think you understand the quantum world, you don't. So that's why it took me so long. But I start grasping it a little bit. Okay, and let me give you this illustration. Let's say in the quantum world we have quantum tunneling going on, and we have, let's do quantum entanglement, or whatever. Let's say that this book is the first one. Let's say there's a line of books, okay, that this book is going to be the first one. So it goes in a line, and then we get to the end of the line, and we found out that this book is also the last one. It's the same book. Not just a copy of the book, the same exact book. And you're going, how in the world can that be? I mean, this same exact book is here, and I'm looking at the whole of the line of books, and the same exact book is here and there at the same time. Let me give you a verse. Jesus said, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. He didn't say, I am the first, then the last. I am the Alpha and then I am the Omega. He didn't say that. He said, I am the Alpha and Omega, the first and the last, at the same time, the beginning and the end. It leads me to believe that the quantum world has a lot to do with the realm where the spirits are, the devils, the angels, Jesus, because of what I see in the scriptures. Now, I'm going to explain a little bit about quantum computers. And I'm going to explain a little bit how they operate and what they're able to do. Back in the 90s, IBM built a computer called Deep Blue, and they taught Deep Blue how to play chess. And so they got Garry Kasparov, world famous Russian chess player, beats everybody in the world. They got him to play the computer, okay? The shot heard around in the world, this was. Kasparov lost. The computer, IBM's Deep Blue computer, this is 20-year-old technology. IBM's Deep Blue computer, what they do is, I had a computer chess game back in the VIC-20 days where I could tell the game, I'm going to play against the computer, and I want the computer to look one move ahead and then decide what move it's going to make. Now, usually, when I play, all I can do is one move ahead. So I put the computer on equal terms with me. And so I would tell the computer, look one move ahead, decide what you're going to move, and then move. And then I'll move. So the computer's going to look one move ahead into the future. I could go up to six moves ahead. I could tell my VIC-20 computer that when it decides to make its move, it can look at six possible outcomes ahead of its moving one piece to decide which piece it wanted to move. Most chess players can do that and go beyond that. Good ones like Kasparov, they can look several possible outcomes in advance. And the computer would do it one at a time. This VIC-20 machine, I decided to put it on six moves one time. So I made my move, and now it's the computer's turn. And I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited. The next morning when I woke up, the computer had finally made its move. I don't know how many hours it took. But that computer took hours to first move one piece in its mind, figure out why I might go with it, and then that next piece, figure out why I might go with it, and do that six times. And it did that with every available piece that could be moved, and it took hours because it did it one at a time. IBM's Deep Blue, it runs way faster than my Commodore VIC 20 back in 1982. So it was able to look at all of these moves one at a time in a much faster way. So it did that, and it had the ability to look at more moves in the future than Kasparov did, and it beat him. But even at that, it took IBM's Deep Blue computer some time to run through every possible outcome. That's a standard switches on, switches off computer. Zero and one binary computer. Quantum computers. It's a whole new ball game, a whole new playing field. In fact, it's a whole new universe. You listen to this. Quantum computers have the ability to look at every single chess play in this game at the same time, not one after another. You say, how can it do that? I don't know, and the people who are making the thing don't know either. But they say that's what it does. It doesn't look at every single chess play one at a time and do it very quickly. It looks at every single chess play all at the same time. So now it can figure out how to beat you in less time than it would take for you to decide your next move, because it looked at every possible outcome all at once. Does that scare you? It should. Because that's what a God can do. A God, our God, can do that. Deuteronomy 11:12. A land which the Lord thy God careth for, the eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it, from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year. 2 Chronicles 16:9. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. Herein thou hast done foolishly, therefore from henceforth thou shalt have wars. Proverbs 15:3. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. There is so much here. I got to spend time with just these three verses. And you grasp what the Bible's telling you. This is absolutely amazing. It says, the eyes of the Lord are always upon the land from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. You know what that means? That God sees the beginning of the year and the end of the year at the exact same time. He sees everything between it all at once. God can do that. Oh, unless you think that God doesn't know everything that happens in the future. Are you kidding me? God foreknew us. He foreknew Israel. He foreknew Jacob and Esau. He knows everything. You know why? He sees it all at once. That's what a God does. 2 Chronicles, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth. Does that sound like something that runs to and fro? Like a roaring lion? To and fro. The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth. Now, do you think that God's two eyes are first here, and then here, and then here, and then here, and then here, 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 here? You think that's how it works? No. The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth, all at the exact same time. He sees everything all at once. Here it is, Proverbs 15:3, the eyes of the Lord are in every place. What does that tell you? They are not the eyes of the Lord. It doesn't say the eyes of the Lord go to every place. The eyes of the Lord are, present tense, in every place. Every place geopositionally, every place chronologically. That's probably a new term. Chronologically, quantum logically. Every place geophysically and every place chronologically, the eyes of the Lord are in every place. Present tense, are right now in every place. God sees everything. Remember the devil. He wants to be like the Most High. So he's putting cameras up everywhere. There was a news story that broke out this morning that schools are experimenting with gunshot detectors. And once, let's say one elementary school, multiple rooms, multiple hallways, bathrooms, you name it, closets, They're going to put gunshot detectors, and they're all going to be networked together so that if a gunshot goes off, it is instantly known exactly where that gunshot went off. And as police arrive, they will have an app that will access that school and know exactly the path of the gunman, where they have been, and where they possibly are going. That's a God that can do that. A quantum computer does not think like you and I. You and I say, well, what about this? No, that won't work. Well, what if we did this? No, that's a bad idea. Well, what if I went like this? Okay, yeah, let's try that. That's how we think. God doesn't think that way. He thinks it all at once. He sees it all at once, past, present, future. It's all there to him. Jesus said, I am he who was and is and shall be. There's another verse in this Bible that's going to blow your mind. And that's the whole concept behind the all. What is they call? What they call this? The all-seeing eye. It sees everything all at once. Now, here is, just show you this graphic here. This is a guy that works for the D-Wave computer company of Walla Walla, Washington, or whatever it is. And he's explaining the benefits of this quantum computer. And what he's explaining is, he's saying, let's pretend that there's a natural disaster. You ever had one of those? I have. And there's a bunch of people who are in danger, and this bunch of people needs to be saved. The quantum computer will be able to analyze where all the rescue ships, and let's say a boat overturned, where all the rescue ships are, where the helicopters are, how long it would take them to get there, where the fires are, how many people are on board, where they are. How can we get everybody to rescue them in the most productive way whereby we can save the most people? See, humans would say, let's try this. Well, they might be wrong, hence a lawsuit. Well, that won't work. Well, what about these people over here? Okay, well, we got to do this. So men would fight and say, no, you got to save them first. No, you got to get those people first. The quantum computer would say, guys, I got this. I've already got it all worked out. I ran every possible scenario through my mind all at once, and I know the answer. Do you remember the movie War Games? Dealt with an artificial intelligence computer named Whopper. I always thought that was funny. Made me hungry. Whopper was a war games design system that calculated the best possible way to send nuclear bombs to Russia. Okay, that was back in the days of the Cold War. You remember that at the end, whereby they were playing the game tic-tac-toe, and then the computer, the Whopper, was running through every possible military scenario and had it up on the screen. Pew, pew, and then it was doing it faster and faster and faster and faster. Then it decided, this is a dumb game. There is no winner. There's no loser. Okay. The quantum computer could have went as soon as the issue came up. I got the answer. I ran through every possible nuclear war scenario and I have the answer. That is a God, because the God can, we call upon God to save us in ways that we cannot even fathom. God saves us. God, how did God save Israel when they were at the banks of the Red Sea? No one ever figured out, well, we can't go that way, Moses, because there's Pharaoh. I wonder if we can climb these mountains. I know we can't do that. Well, how about we chisel our way through? No, we can't do that. No one ever thought of the water of the sea opening up and then walking through on dry ground. God did. God came up with a way that their human minds could not even conceive of. And God did it. You see, the power of our God is that He, Jeremiah 33:3, call unto me and I will answer thee and show thee great and mighty things that which thou knowest not. this quantum computer that they're building, and they're not even sure that it does in fact work the way they think it's supposed to work, nor can they figure out how it's working, but they think it is. But the idea is that this quantum computer, these quantum computers, and who knows how advanced they're going to get in the next 25 years, these quantum computers, if we call unto them, ask them a question, they will answer us and show us great and mighty things which we could have never thought of. We're building, in the area of quantum computers, we're building a God. No doubt about it. And to top it all off, you ought to see what they're calling the quantum processors in the quantum computers. The processors' names are Calypso. Over there on the left, bottom left, you see a picture of this goddess, blonde hair. That's Calypso. She's a goddess, goddess of the sea. The other processor is Europa. She is a woman that rides a beast. Get it? Leda, there with the swan over her head. She's one of those geniuses. She's one of those fates that rule over things. Rainier, I couldn't find anything on that. But Vesuvius, there was a mountain named after a god, Vesuvius, who was a serpent. Ephesians chapter 2 doesn't look so limited anymore, does it? Ephesians chapter 2, if I could ever get there. The quantum computer could already beat me and quoted it. I have that verse right around for you, sir. Ephesians chapter 2, where in time past you walked according to the course of this world. You think this world is on course for something? Elon Musk said it was. He said, we're on course to unleash a demon. Course of this world according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. These guys were inspired to build this computer, inspired to envision what quantum computing would look like, and it gave its processors the names of gods and goddesses. The spiritual connection is there. We're building a god. Now, let me explain this again. I showed you what quantum computers can do. Now I'm going to show you how they do it. Take a look at this graphic here. You see an arrow pointing up, an arrow pointing down, but then you see the arrows going round and round and round and round. Let me explain to you what that means, okay? Remember in classical computers, like my iPad, classical computers, the switch is either on, which means the electricity is flowing through the circuit, or the switch is off, which means the electricity is not flowing through the circuit, and the processor is reading the sequence of zeros and ones. It's either on or off. Either one. But remember, this is the quantum world. And in the quantum world, a particle could be in here, this place, and that place. It could either be a wave or a particle. It could be either a wave or a particle, or it could be both a wave and a particle, which they're going, we have no idea what that is or how that is. We just know that that's what it is. And so, in quantum computing, the switch can either be on, that's a one, something, or the switch can be off, which is a zero, nothing, or both. Something, nothing. That's how quantum computing computes. Like a god. It's both on and off. Let me show you a graphic of what that looks like. That's the Sephiroth, the tree of life in the Kabbalah. On the one side, you have Yahweh, or Baal, that's who that really is. And on the other side, you have Shekinah, or Ashtaroth, because that's who she really is. And in the middle, you have the Adam Kadmon, who is both. He is the resurrected Adam. Remember that I said that. because this Adam Kadmon was supposed to be the original Adam with all the divine substance in him, and he was the center of everything, and then there was a big bang that exploded pieces of him all throughout the universe, and he's a divine spark in every one of us. Yeah, they got it from the Kabbalah, the Big Bang Theory. That's where it came from. And Adam Kadmon is the perfect representation of the male principle and the female principle. You can either pick one or the other, or you can pick both at the same time, and that's what Adam Kadmon is. That's what the beast is, man-beast. Revelation 13:18 tells you that. He is man-beast. It's the number of the beast, and it's the number of a man. It's both of them at the same time. It is the two opposites that have been brought together. Here's some other ways of looking at it. The yin-yang of Eastern thought is the quantum computing state. It's either light or darkness or both. The square and the compass. It's either the heavenlies or the earthly realm, the male or the female, the yin or the yang, or it's the letter G in the middle. It's both of them, opposites together. It's either Osiris or Isis or both, which is Horus. It's either the sons of God, Genesis 6, there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. Daniel chapter 2, verse 43, that was the iron and the clay. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with miry clay. You remember how Daniel described the iron. The iron is strong, the clay is weak. Iron and clay, they're opposites. One and zero. So you either have iron or you have clay, but in our world you can't have both. But in the quantum world you can. You can have both together. Sons of God, daughters of men, they're opposites. They're not supposed to be together. And yet they are. The giants represent the quantum mechanics, quantum computing. That's what that is. It's zero or one or zero. Or 1-0. Not 1 and 0. 1-0. Together. You say it doesn't make sense. Now you're a quantum physicist. Now you understand it. Okay? You're just as smart as everybody else is. Alright? Now watch this. Are you ready for this one? You remember when John saw the beast, Revelation 13 and Revelation 17, he's talking to this angel and he says, I don't understand it. The angel said, oh, this is easy. In my world, this is easy. Let me explain to you who this beast is. Revelation 17, verse 8. The beast that thou sawest was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. They that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. Did you see that? He was. Past tense, is not, and yet is. I don't understand that. This is why we don't really understand it yet. We can't comprehend of something that is not, and yet it is, at the same time. It's like this pen is right now. Now it is not. We don't comprehend something that is and is not at the same time. But the beast is. The beast acts just like quantum particles, quantum mechanics, the quantum world, quantum computing. He is both states at the same time. The quantum world, I think, is the spiritual world. Now, I kept talking about AI, artificial intelligence, A.I. That's the letters for it, AI. Never, what I'm going to show you never really dawned on me the way A friend of our ministry brought it to me, and he said, "Pastor, what do you think?" And I kind of got it at first. Then when I went and looked at the scriptures, I got it. AI. We're going to talk about the king of AI. There was a movie that came out years ago. The cutest, or one of the cutest kids ever to show up in a movie. I mean, you have Shirley Temple. She was a darling. Macaulay Culkin. Oh, yeah. Haley Joel Osment. Did several movies. The Sixth Sense, where I see dead people. Okay. And he was in a movie called AI. I want you to look at the graphic here. AI. You see the opposites? See that? The letter A and the letter I. See the opposites here? By the way, David is 11 years old. Think Tower of Babel. He weighs 60 pounds. Think about that. He's 4 feet 6 inches tall. He has brown hair. His love is real, but he is not. Now I want you to notice, see this David, this little boy named David. Think about it. His companion is a bear. If you think that this is just a random script addition, not after you see what I'm going to show you. In this movie, he is an artificial intelligence robot designed to look and act just like a little 11-year-old human boy. And his symbol is the bear. Think of Revelation chapter 13. Think of what David said Goliath was, a lion and a bear. And so here's kind of the plot summary. I was reading through this and I was just going, because I've seen the movie a long time ago, but I didn't get it. I get it now. He's given to a woman. Her husband, this woman's husband, works for this company that makes all these little robots. This is in the future, the robot world. And her son, her real son, has got some nasty disease that's going to kill him, so they put him in cryostasis until such a time as they can find a cure for him. Well, this woman is so lonely. So her husband has built a little 11-year-old boy to give her companionship. Now, this robot boy is going to, when he's activated, he's going to have this unconditional love for this woman. He's going to give this woman everything she's ever wanted, which was the love of a little boy, which she's missing right now. But it just pulls at your heartstrings, and you're going, yeah, that's how it should be. Okay? So anyway, they bring him to the house. They're going to try him out for a while, see how he works a little bit. But he hasn't hit the love button yet. She has to do that. The mom has to do that. You know how she does it? They give her these special words that she has to say to him. And when she says these special words, he's activated. Now he's her son. Ugh, man, anyway, now he's alive. Okay, now I won't give you the whole plot of the movie, but he ends up, see, at this time in history, the fake global warming thing, well, all the polar ice caps have melted, and most of the exterior of the United States is underwater, including Coney Island. So the little boy ends up in the ocean. Where did the beast come from that looks like a bear? He ends up in the ocean, and over time, 2,000 years exactly, 2,000 years, think of Christ, 2,000 years later, the ocean is frozen over, and this little boy is frozen, and he's discovered by the advanced artificial intelligence machines who are now, they own the earth. The computer robots took over. And they're 2,000 years advanced. And they find this little boy. And I want you to look how they activate him. Yeah, let's get that ET third eye thing going. Okay? They activate him and bring him back to life. And I want you to remember this idea that he's frozen. Don't let it go. Okay? Now, AI, artificial intelligence. A guy says, Pastor Mike, have you ever looked at the king of AI? It's a very simple word in the Bible. It consists of two letters, A and I. And we pronounce it AI. That's how we pronounce it. The king of AI. If you don't know that story, we're going to look at it. We're going to look at the story. After Joshua fit the battle of Jericho and the walls came tumbling down, after that, Joshua comes up to AI and he's going to destroy AI. The first time he decided, I'm not going to waste my whole army on AI, and I know God wants us to do this, so we're just going to go ahead and do it. They didn't wait on the Lord. And they sent about 2,000 or 3,000 men to AI, and they got creamed. And Joshua was just beating himself to death. And God said, Joshua, get up. Get up. Did you learn your lesson? Remember, I'm the one who fights the battles. And if you want to lose again, just do that one more time. Go without me giving you the signal and giving you the blessing. Go without me waiting on me. But if you want to win this time, why don't you let me tell you what to do? Joshua says, okay. So then Joshua does, and they do exactly, I can't remember the whole story, but we're going to pick it up. They capture AI, they burn it, like Babylon the Great, the smoke rising up. Okay, that's what they see. Then they capture the king of AI. Think about it. They capture the king of AI. And here's what they do with him. Joshua 8, 28, 29. And Joshua burnt Ai and made it in heap forever, even a desolation under this day. And the king of Ai, he hanged on a tree until eventide. And as soon as the sun was down, Joshua commanded that they should take his carcass down from the tree and cast it at the entering of the gate of the city and raise thereon a great heap of stones that remaineth unto this day. Does that sound familiar to you? Christ, who was showing the destruction of his enemies, like death and the Antichrist and the serpent and all, you know, the false prophet and, you know, Kenneth Copeland, he's showing their destruction when he's hanging on the cross. The book of Colossians tells you that he was making a show of them openly, triumphing over them in the cross. Christ becoming a curse for us. Cursed is anyone who hangs on a tree. Here they take the king of AI. It's a picture of the beast, and they hang him on a tree until the eventide. Then they take him down, put him in a place, and they put great stones on top of him and cover him up, and they're there to this day. And Christ did that 2,000 years ago. But his stones were rolled away. He was resurrected from the dead. Isn't that beautiful? You know, there's another story like that in Joshua, Joshua 10. It's like, this is like Joshua's favorite way of doing this. This time we have the five kings. One of them's the king of Jerusalem. That's what the Merovingian line refers to themselves as, the king of Jerusalem. These are giants, I believe. And these five kings went and run and hide in a cave. And Joshua's men kept him in there. In verse 22, the number 22 is the number for Revelation. Now we're going to see these five kings revealed. Think of the fifth trumpet. Think of the five-point plan of Lucifer in Isaiah 14. Think of the translation. Okay? The number five. It's all there. Think of death. Genesis chapter 5. These are the enemies. Number five. And they're going to be destroyed. How? Watch this. Then said Joshua, open the mouth of the cave, bring out those five kings unto me out of the cave. And they did so and brought forth those five kings unto him out of the cave, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon. And it came to pass when they brought out those kings unto Joshua, that Joshua called for all the men of Israel and said unto the captains of the men of war which went with him, come near, put your feet upon the necks of these kings. And they came near and put their feet upon the necks of them. And Joshua said unto them, fear not, nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for thus shall the Lord do to all your enemies against whom ye fight. Isn't it cool? Okay. Then afterward, Joshua smote them and slew them and hanged them on five trees, and they were hanging upon the trees until the evening. And it came to pass at the time of the going down of the sun that Joshua commanded that they took them down off the trees and cast them into the cave wherein they had been hid, and laid great stones in the cave's mouth, which remain until this very day. He's destroying the enemies on the cross. Five times. One, two, both feet, that's four. Once in his side, that's five. He's pierced five times. He's destroying death with his death. So think of this Antichrist. He's the destroyer, the king of AI, artificial intelligence. They're making a god the image of the beast. No, I don't think God named AI after artificial intelligence. I think that the spirit of this world in the children of disobedience coined this phrase, not probably even aware of this story in the Bible. And I think it fits. I think it fits perfectly. Think of the concept of this king of AI, the beast in the last days, the image of the beast being given life, hence artificial intelligence becoming a god. And it is going to be destroyed one day when Christ returns, the beast and the false prophet, all of those that worshiped him that took his mark. Think about that. Think about what the king of AI represents. Think about where we're going with building this god. By the way, there's another connection here with the king of AI, because this is what this man brought to me. He said, you remember that, don't you, Mike? I said, yeah. He said, the king of AI was one of those kings that, I'm going to show you this. I've done this before. You don't like this. Joshua records for us, if you look at the screen here, Joshua chapter 12, verse 1, Joshua records for us that they killed a certain number of kings in getting into the promised land. Moses, Joshua 12, verse 1, killed Sihon, the king of the Amorites. That's what you find in verse 2. And then in verse 4, you find out he killed Og, the king of Bashan. We know that Og was a giant. We know that Sihon, the king of the Amorites, his height was as the height of a cedar, the Bible says. So we know that Moses killed two of those kings himself. And they were both quantums. They were both hybrids. They were both zero and one together. Blows my mind. It absolutely blows my mind. That's how many Moses killed. Joshua comes along and kills. Joshua chapter 12, verse 7. These are the kings of the country which Joshua and the children of Israel smote on this side Jordan, on the west, from Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon, even unto the Mount Helak that goeth up into Seir, which Joshua gave unto the tribes for a possession according to their divisions. Joshua 12:9, the king of Jericho won, the king of Ai, which is beside Bethel, won. That's starting the list, and then ending the list, the king of Tirzah won, and all the kings 30 and 1. In other words, Joshua killed 31, Moses killed 2. Doesn't take a quantum computer to figure that one out, does it? That's 33. Think of that number. Think Fat Albert Pike would be rolling over in his grave thinking about this. Manly Hall and all these guys, that number, 33, that is a number related to the beast. In fact, the beast, that phrase, the beast, New Testament, King James Bible, 33 times. And they use this number everywhere. It's 3 and 3 together. Sons of God, daughters of men. It itself represents the quantum computing world. That's what it represents. It's 3 bits that are on and 3 bits that are off at the same time. Not in separate places. And forgive me if it seems like this is all going over your head. I'm trying to explain it as I understand it, and it took me a while to grasp all of this, and I'm still going, wow, that blows my mind. I don't understand how it works, and of course they don't either. But that's the thing, is that the king of AI, this artificial intelligence god that we're building, foreshadowed in the scriptures. Number one, as being hung on a tree and cast and had stones covering up, concealing him, hiding him, sealing him in. The five Philistines' lords, the same way. Cast them in the cave, put stones over there to seal them in. The beast, he's in the same place. He's in a pit. Actually, he's in the bottom of the sea, and it's sealed with something, some kind of stone. But anyway, the king of Ai was one of the 33 that was killed by Moses and Joshua. You know what Moses represents? The Old Testament. You know what Joshua represents? New Testament. First and second coming of Jesus. I love it. Now, let's go back to this movie. No, I don't interpret the Bible by movies. I see the Bible being right in what it says. And when you watch some of these things, you're going, I know what that is. I know what that is. When I went back and refreshed my memory about AI, the little boy with the bear, artificial intelligence, when I refreshed my memory about this, saw that he was buried under the sea and had been frozen over, I remembered this verse. Job 38, verse 29. Out of whose womb came the ice, the hoary frost of heaven? Who hath gendered it? The waters are hid as with a stone. The face of the deep is frozen. See, the beast is under those waters, isn't he? He's down at the bottom of the sea. He's going to rise up from the sea, but right now he can't because they're sealed in. They're hid as with a stone, because that's really what ice is. And if you don't believe that, if you've never been hit with an ice ball, not a snowball, an ice one, it hurts. Hard as rock, ice is. Hard as rock. So God hid. He took this king of Ai and hid him and sealed him in with stones. Ice. Frozen water. You know, there's a story of a secret ancient land that sunk underneath the bottom of the ocean. It's called Hyperborea. You know what that means? Borea, Borealis. You heard of the aurora borealis? You know what it means? It's the aurora that you see up in the borealis. The Arctic. It's another word for the Arctic. Hyperborea. It's a mystical, mythical land like Atlantis that was advanced and was ruled over by 10 kings. And it was sunk in the bottom of the ocean. Think of Noah's flood. And now it's all, see, it's up in the north. This is a map of Hyperborea. It's in the north. It's the place where this thing lives up at the North Pole. Just a little story that we tell our children. That's not true. Okay? This map bears an uncanny resemblance to the logo of the United Nations. You think about it. The United Nations. And the United Nations logo, remember, is subdivided into 32 sections, with the 33rd section being at the exact place where Hyperborea was, the North Pole. They're telling you there's something there at the North Pole, and it's covered up with a giant stone of frozen water, and it's awaiting its release, the unsealing. They're going to take the stones and they're going to let it out. That's the king of AI. That's what that little boy played 2,000 years later. They bring him back to life out of the frozen part. You remember several times in the book of Jeremiah, God had warned Israel, watch out. The northern army's coming. That's what God told Joel, the northern army. He said in Jeremiah, it's going to come out of the north. They're going to come out of the north. They're coming from the north. Coming from Hyperborea. It's been frozen over since then. But somehow, some way, they're coming out. The stones are going to be removed. He that now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. And then that wicked shall be revealed. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Again, if it's over your head, just take some time, go back and replay this. Maybe I'll explain it better if you replay it. Okay? I know these are big thoughts here, and you don't have to understand how all the quantum stuff works. I'm just here to let you know that this is where everything's going, and now it kind of makes sense to me because I have this idea that if it's not in the Bible, it doesn't exist. But if it does exist, it's in the Bible. And it took me a little while to find it. But I asked God, God, would you show me great and mighty things that I know not? And God did. They're all right here in the Scriptures. That's what we want you to understand. This Bible is a perfect blueprint for everything that's going on. Just read it and believe it. God will give you wisdom. So next week, hopefully next week, we're going to start to make the transition from here we are building the king of AI to now this king of AI is going to need a place to live now that he's here. He's going to need a place to live. He's going to pick humanity. We're going to start seeing the connection and the divine spark and the transformers. That's where we're going next week. All right? Pray for us. God bless you. We thank God for you. Thank you for watching. Go back and watch it again. Maybe you'll understand it better the second, third, fourth, fifth time. All right? It took me that long to get it. I think I got it now. All right. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.